say Modani in the
yeah.
morning.
Amen. Thank God we could wake up.
And then, Claudette, I want to wish you, first of all, happy birthday and bruit health, nachat, only joy from all the family. I enjoy seeing how you share happy birthdays to all your family members when they have their birthdays on Facebook.
So, I know I have so many family.
Wonderful. You should only enjoy for many, many more years the company of your family.
That was my great niece today.
Wonderful.
Yes,
so mazal tov.
Beautiful.
My great niece?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The picture is beautiful of her. My goodness.
Oh, she is a beautiful girl. Really, she is. And she's a good girl.
So mazal tov Claudette and to all Claudette's family, whoever has birthday today or tomorrow in the coming month. From all of us here. So let's see who else is here. Ruchama, shalom lach. Tov lirotech. Tov lirotech. Vanessa, hello.
Hello.
Was it great seeing you yesterday. I hope you enjoyed the classes.
Loved them.
Wonderful, wonderful. That was the first time you've heard Rabbi Sonnenberg, right?
Correct.
Yes. He is going to be, he's going to be the dean of Beit Midrash Zichron Dov next year. God willing. That's going to be his job. Barb, good to see you with the birds. No class on birds today. No birds today in our class. But going to be dogs, don't worry. Sheila, good to see you. It was wonderful to see you on Shabbos also.
Here.
Linda, Leslie, good to see you. Ethel, Cantor Meisner, wonderful to see all of you. Before we start, I want to show... Okay, I'll wait for Vanessa to come because she's bringing the dogs. I'll say that for today's class... I should be very careful. I should be very careful because I know that for some of you, dogs are very, very important, I should say. And some people love dogs. I want to start with two things. I want to start, first of all, with a video, a short clip I want to show you. Just to start kicking it off in a more humoristic way. Nothing too serious. Then we'll come back. It's only 35 seconds. Then we'll come back. And I'll tell you a little bit about my personal story and what brought me to prepare this class. And then we'll dive into the sources themselves. All right, so let's watch 30 seconds, not too long. Again, it's not serious. Don't think of it as a serious video, all right? It's not a serious clip. So here you go. Take a look.
Bar Mitzvah, we're going to be raising money for the Israeli Guide Dog Center for the Blind.
And my mom really wants to have a Jewish grandson, so this will get her off our backs for a little bit.
Yeah, Monty, do you think you're going to dance with Daddy?
Hey, Monty.
There's a 5-minute video. I brought only 35 seconds of it. A 5.5-minute video on YouTube. If you want to watch it, you can watch it. It's called Bark Mitzvah. Bark Mitzvah. Bar Mitzvah for dogs. Obviously not serious. Not serious at all. Some people might think
it's on YouTube.
You can search Bark Mitzvah on YouTube. You can see it. It's a humoristic video of, there's a Jewish channel that decided to produce a humoristic video on celebrating Bar Mitzvah for dogs. But I wanted to kick it off with this because I really want to know, that's what I want to explore today, what is the Jewish approach towards raising dogs? What is the Jewish approach, the Torah's approach, specifically the halachic approach towards raising dogs? Now I'll say, before we start, and I'll share the source in a minute, I'll say that on a personal note, I have to say it, I don't like dogs. I don't like dogs. I don't know when and how it started. My mom grew up with a dog. My dad wanted a dog and my grandparents never let him have a dog. Priel has a dog. And when I made Priel, I don't like dogs. I don't know. I don't remember having any problem when I was younger. Sometimes, you're traumatic because a dog chased you or something. But I don't remember anything. I can't recall any bad experience with dogs. But I just don't... I find hard time connecting with animals in general. I like animals in general. It's very interesting to go to the zoo and so on. But I don't like dogs or animals in the house in general. I have a hard time with it. If one day any of you have dogs and I will come to visit you, I'll ask to leave them or outside or in one of the rooms, because I really have hard time being with dogs in the same room. Saying that, I married Priel, and Priel's family had a dog for 15 years. And when I first came to their house, I told them it was like 3 months after I met Priel for the first time. And I told myself, Idan, you have to be brave. You can't show you're a coward. You have to be brave when you walk in to Priel's parents' house. You have to demonstrate as much courage as you can. Don't show them you're afraid of dogs. And I was very nervous. I was more nervous from the dog than I was nervous from meeting Priel's parents. All right. And when I entered the house, the first thing I saw is this huge black Labrador just barking at me as I walked in. And I immediately ran out of the house. Immediately, I chickened and I had to run out of the house, and nothing that I tried to help myself, nothing helped. And then they had to take him to put him outside in the backyard, and I brought in anyway. Since then, Priel's family know when the dad comes to the house, I have a hard time with the dog. And in general, even after 4 years, I still don't get much along with the dog. So I don't think it's my problem. I think the dogs just don't get along with me. That's what I think happens in general. So I have to say that at the beginning of the class, because some people hold that when any rabbi is giving a halachic specifically oriented class, a lot of times he is bringing from his own experience, his own ideology into the conclusion. So I want to say it at the beginning, so you're not going to think that anything that I'm saying is derived out of my subjective experience. I'll try to keep this class as objective as possible. All right, throughout the class. That I will try to do. But if any of you are celebrating a bar mitzvah, don't bother inviting me. I'm not going to come anyway. So don't worry about that. So let me share in the chat box our source sheet for today. Oh, by the way, here you go. This is the link for the YouTube video if you want to watch it again later. Let me send. Let me send this. Here you go. This is the source sheet for today. You also got it in your in your source, in your emails. I'm going to show the screen, and let's roll. So when we talk about the approach for raising dogs in halacha, when we talk about this,
it's not recorded. You said you're going to record it.
Why not record it? No, I record it in my phone, only audio.
Oh,
it's recorded.
Okay.
Yeah, usually I don't record the Zoom. You record only audio because not everyone wants their faces to be shown. Yes, it's a recorded. Thank you, Ruchama, for reminding me that. Thank you. So when we start talking about the Torah's approach towards dogs, we need to, first of all, go as back as we can to Tanakh, to biblical scriptures, try to trace where do we find dogs in scripture. All right, that's the first thing we need to see. We want to see what is the Torah's approach towards dogs. And last week, Ruchama mentioned correctly that the first place we see dogs in the Torah is actually when we come to Makat Bechorot, to the plague of the firstborn, right? The last strike, the last Makkah in Egypt, and I brought it in source number one. The Torah tells us, very interestingly, in Makat Bechorot, but not a dog shall snarl at any of the Israelites, at human or beast, in order that you may know that Hashem makes a distinction between Egypt and Israel. So while there was this really huge tragedy on the Egyptian side of the neighborhood of the city, in the Israeli side, on the Hebrew side, even the dogs just went to sleep. They did not even bark. In order for us to see how sharp was the distinction between Israeli side, the Hebrew side of Makat Bechorot, that did not suffer at all, and the Egyptian side of it. So we can see that in that sense we use dogs. I don't know if in a positive or a negative, all right, we'll see it very soon, but we use it as a symbol of distinction between the Hebrews and the Egyptians. A really, I should say, negative approach towards dogs is found in Sefer Shemuel. And it brought in source number two. When David meets Goliath, and they're fighting, a very famous story, right? You probably learned it with Rabbi Trichino more than once. When David encounters Goliath, when they meet each other together, then Goliath comes, he sees he's this giant warrior, right? Giant Palestinian warrior. He sees David, this little fellow, this lad, And what he tells them is, and the Philistine in Psalms number 2, the Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his God. King David did not have a sword, didn't have any really sophisticated weapon. He came with those sticks and rocks, and he tried to show Goliath how big he is. And Goliath just made clap of him. And he says, what are you? Are you thinking I'm a dog? That's what you think I am? When you're coming to me with those sticks, you think you're going to be able to train me or to take control of me like a dog? I'm not a dog. I'm a warrior. So a dog here is represented by, I should say, a negative light more than a positive light. And we see it throughout many places in Tanakh. I didn't bring all the sources inside. But take a look. We see, for example, when Achav, when he was a king of Israel, a very wicked person, We learned a little bit about it when we learned about Eliyahu. So when Achav died, and also when Izebel, his wife, Jezebel, dies, and so on, not only, we see that dogs are part of the punishment. They're brought by God as part of the punishment. Take a look. When he's told about his punishment before he dies, God tells him in source number 3. He tells, you shall speak to him. Goes to Eliyahu, to prophet Elijah, and tells prophet Elijah, you should go to King Achav and tell him this will be his punishment. What will be his punishment? Thus says Hashem, have you killed and also taken possessions? And you shall speak to him saying, thus says Hashem, in the place where dogs licked the blood of Naboth, dogs shall lick your blood, also yours. Remember, we learned about Prophet Elijah together, about Naboth, who had a vineyard. And Izebel wanted the vineyard, right? He said that Ahab wanted it. He said no. Izebel said, I'll take care of it. She tried to think about this plan, this plot to kill him. And she manages to kill him while he was innocent. And when you kill him, you take, Ahab got to take, to inherit his vineyard. And God says to Elijah, go tell him his punishment will be he will die. Where the dogs lick Naboth's blood, they shall lick your blood as well. You see that the Navi here uses dogs in a very, very negative light. Very negative light. Uses it as a punishment, right? They could use cats. Could use giraffes from last week. Why dogs? And now I want to give it to, I want to throw it to the audience. We saw now 3 different sources. One was kind of, I said, maybe positive because the dogs try to do something good, right? But in source number 2, source number 3, we saw negative approaches. Why would the Torah and the Navi use dogs in terms of mocking King David and in terms of punishing wicked people? Why dogs? Why not any other animal? What do you think? Any suggestion? Why dogs? From all animals in the world. Any suggestion? Really nothing. Okay, so take a look. I brought in source number 4. Source number 4, the Torah tells us, also regarding dogs, that if someone finds a non-kosher meat, what we call treif. Treif is a non-kosher meat, right? He goes on the street and finds a non-kosher meat. Obviously, we're not allowed to eat it. Rather, we don't need to throw it to the garbage. We can give it to the dog. Take a look in source number 4. The Torah says, and you shall be to me man of holiness. And flesh in the field that was torn you shall not eat, you shall throw it to the dogs. In other words, the dogs, and this is the first thing I want to convey, in the Torah in general, the dog represents an animal or a creature that is the opposite of a human being. As crazy as it might sound, because we usually hold the dog, they're the best friends of man. And you see, they're so sensitive and their feelings. But in the Torah and in the Navi, the instances, the references to dogs are specifically in places where they are representing the alter ego of the ideal man. For example, we are holy people. We should not eat it. We give it to our alter ego. Which key creature is the ultimate alter ego of the human being? The dog. Also Goliath, he goes to David. He says, I'm a warrior. The opposite of a warrior is a dog, right? Same things we say to Achav. The lowest of the lowest punishment that can happen to a human being is that the dog will lick his blood. So we see that the dog represents something that is exactly the opposite of mankind, of human beings, which is very interesting. Very interesting, because usually we hold the dogs are different. So only based on scripture, the approach is not so positive. Not so positive. But it's not really halachic. In this class, as I told you, animal issues in halacha, like we did last week, we did giraffe kashrut in halacha. I want to explore more halachically oriented approach of the Torah towards raising dog. Can we raise dog? What can we do with dogs and so on? Because we do know many people raise dogs and they love dogs, and it's not only we don't only learn halacha based on scriptures. However, Ruchama also mentioned last week correctly, and I brought it in Rashi in source number 5, that what the dogs did on what we read in source number 1 in Egypt during Makat Bechorot was actually a very positive thing, and they actually were rewarded for it. Take a look. Rashi says that on the scripture, on source number 4, the fact that we give to the dogs the treif meat, and we don't just throw it to the garbage, we can give it to the dogs, he reads it as a positive reward for the dogs. In source number 5, Rashi tells us, scripture tells you, at the same time, that God does not withhold the reward due to any of his creatures. The dog is entitled to reward because it is stated, but against the children of Israel should not dog move its tongue, as we read in source number 1. And this happened. The Holy One, blessed be, he said, give it the reward. Give it the reward that it, the dog, deserves. And what is the reward that it deserves? That we don't throw it to the garbage, but if we don't, we find a non-kosher food, then we don't, we can give it to the dog. Now, why is it very interesting? Because when we come to halachot of kashrut in general, for example, mixing meat and milk, right? We say there are 3 different prohibitions about eating meat and milk together. The first prohibition of eating meat and milk together is eating it. Actually, a person is not allowed to mix meat and milk and eat it together. But we have 2 other prohibitions. We have eating, we have cooking. There's a separate prohibition for cooking, and also enjoying. Enjoying meat and milk, meaning, for example, you cannot sell it, meat and milk, for another person and benefit from this money. Or also give it to your dog as food, because you're benefiting from it, right? So we see there are some halachot regarding benefiting from non-kosher food. But when it comes to non-kosher animal for a treif meat, Kadosh Baruch Hu, God tells us, we reward the dog and we let them eat this meat, even though it's not kosher, thanks to what they did when they did not bark during Makat Bechorot. Very, very, very interesting when we're talking about this. In general, I should say, the dog is mentioned 32 times in the Bible. 32 times throughout the Tanakh, the dog is mentioned in different cases, in different stories. Very, very, very interesting. But again, most of the cases are negative. They're not positive. Most of the cases are negative in that sense. Very interesting. However, when we go to Chazal, when we go to the rabbis, to the Mishnah, to the Gemara, to later generations, later books, we do find slight a different approach towards dog. Not totally negative, but more like what Rashi said. A little bit more positive. And he brought an example. An example that Vanessa would love is brought in source number 6. The Gemara in Tractate, Masechet Horayot, says as follows. The students of Rabbi Elazar asked him, for what reason does a dog recognize its master while a cat does not recognize its master? What do we mean by recognize its master? I know that some people don't like to say they're masters of their dogs, they're owners, or they raise dogs. I had to think about the title of the class, right? The Torah allows you to own a dog, to raise a dog, to pet a dog. I don't know, there's different ways of saying it, and I wanted to be as PC as possible in this, and so no one will be insulted or offended. But the students of Rabbi Elazar ask him, very interestingly, think about this yeshiva, this Torah academy in Israel. Back then, the students go to the rabbi, to the rabbi, rabbi, we have a question. The rabbi goes, oh my goodness, what's the question you have? You have to tell us, you have to help us. Why would the dog recognize us, but the cat doesn't? That's the question that they ask me. Very interesting. It's not a Torah, it's not a halachic question. It's a question about dogs. Very interesting. But what we're referring to is the fact that we all know that dogs have this kind of a character, right? This loving character that they really remember, the kid really remember and can memorize faces and recognize people by their smell and so on. And they're very sharp in terms of recognizing whoever is coming to them. They know that if there's someone they don't like me, they will bark and they will jump. Sometimes they bark and jump when they love someone also, right? That's also true. But they're very good in it. So the question is, why would they the dog recognize, but the cat would not? So Rabbi Elazar said to them, if it is established that with regard to one who eats from that which a mouse eats, eating that item causes him to forget, with regard to the cat who eats the mouth itself, all the more so does eating it cause it to forget. Do you understand this answer? You don't understand this answer. So let's go again through the answer. Let's try to explain. Rabbi Elazar said as follows. We know it is established that when one is eating what the mouse eats, what is what the mouse eats? For example, the mouse eats really the lowest of the lowest of the food, and the dogs also can eat whatever you're going to throw to them. Not everything is healthy to them, but if you're not really training them, they're not going to be so picky. And he says, what they do, something they can forget. We hold that if a person eats, not only a dog, but if a person eats something that the mouse eats, for example, something that is really low, really abolished, something that is not and so on, something that really represents the lowest of the lowest of food items in the world, he will, we say, forget. Why forget? Because in terms of, I don't want to get into Kabbalah stuff and Kabbalah stuff in general, but we hold on that if a person is not practicing high manners or high standard of living, of quality of life, it will also be expressed in other areas. In other areas, we hear him talk about his memories, and maybe his memory will not be as good. So when we come to the cat, who actually chases and eats the mouse itself, not only the food of the mouse, but the mouse itself, you all remember Tom and Jerry, or all those kind of cartoons, right? So when the cat itself chases and eats about the mouse, Allah have kama v'chama. Obviously, he will not be so intelligent and will forget and not recognize its owner and its master. Now, what really stands here behind this Gemara is not talking about animals. There is a Musar here, right? There is a message that the rabbis are trying to tell us. It's not only about animals. Now, I assume that what they're trying to talk about is about two different kinds of people. There is a person that is more similar to a dog, and there's a person that is more similar to a cat. And what they're saying is that the Kono, the master we're talking to, is not human beings. It's the Kadosh Baruch Hu, it's God. And some people recognize God. Some people feel God. Some people can know when God is present. But for some people, they just don't have any kind of connection, of relationship. They don't maintain any kind of recognition with God. So what I think what the rabbis here are really dealing with is not exactly the difference between dogs and cats, more about the differences between human beings and how one recognizes God and one not. When we talk about food that the mouse eat, we talk about things that are not in high level of spiritualism, people that are engaging most of the times with physicality, with mundane, with materialism, compared to those who engage in Torah, spiritualism, and so on. And they're more like dogs than like cats. However, the dogs are represented here in a more positive light. You agree? In a more positive light than it was in Tanakh. Any questions so far? All right. Want to see a little bit more of a positive approaches? Take a look. I brought Maharal, Rabbi Luria of Prague. He's a gadot on Horaya. He explains this solo as follows. Why would the dog recognize its owner? What's so special about dogs? And take a look at the rabbi. Maharal says in source number 7. He says, and it's translated, he says, the dog recognizes his owner, for the dog possesses a soul. And because of this, and because of this, he has awareness and is called a dog. Now, how do you say dog in Hebrew? Kelev, right? What is Kelev? Why is a dog called Kelev? He says, Kelev, for he is all heart. What is a heart in Hebrew? Lev. Kelev. Kulo, heart. He's only heart. See the rabbi writing? Sorry?
Kimolev.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Kimolev is like a heart. Because he loved you. And you see only... So you see here a very, very positive approach by the Maharal of Prague all right, written 16th century in Europe, all right, saying that the dogs, why would they recognize their owners or masters or their family? Why? Because they are full of heart. They love everyone that they see. And they have a soul. They possess a soul. That's a very interesting discussion I had with Vanessa yesterday. That's why I mentioned it. Do animals have soul? Do they have a neshama?
Not only does it's also that you can train a dog. And that's why Israel is training dogs to help
the blind.
The blind, yes. That they can really be to take a blind man to wherever they need. So he can be trained. You can train a dog.
Yeah.
And Israel is actually training, and they send it to the world. They export it.
Yeah. No, you're right. We also use dogs in the army. For example, we have a unit called Oketz, which is a unit that is filled with dogs. Every soldier has his own dog. And they go out to their... I see Vanessa wants to draft to the army now. And they're going to into Gaza, into places, and the dogs are they're amazing. They can find the terrorists using their smell, the sense of smell.
Exactly. In the airport.
In the airport for drugs, yeah.
They can smell from the suitcases.
Yeah. And now imagine me in the airport, how nervous I am when the dog comes close to me and sniffs my suitcase, and how suspicious would the officer be when he sees that I'm all sweaty and nervous when he sees the dogs coming closer. Yes, definitely. But there is a place in the army, a very prestigious unit. Many people that love dog want to be there, you can assume. They get to go back with their dog at home, back home, and so on. And they really raise their dogs. And when there is a war or something, and sometimes the dogs die because if they see a terrorist coming to attack a soldier, they will attack the terrorist. And sometimes they die because of it. There's funerals for the dogs, and it's really it's a big thing. You can read about this unit. It's called Oketz, O-K-E-T-Z, Oketz, O-K-E-T-Z, in the IDF. You can read about this unit. Very, very interesting. Next time, if you want to, I know many people like to help. There's friends of the IDF and so on. They need a lot of money in order to also raise the dogs and pay for their food and something like that. It's always good also to donate to them if you love dogs and so on. So we see the dogs. We have actually a very positive approach when it comes to some of the rabbis. If you want to see another positive approach, I brought a wild story. It's a wild source, in source number 8. I want to read the entire story together. The Ben Yehoyada is the Ben Ish Chai. Ben Ish Chai was a rabbi of Baghdad in Iraq, talking about the 19th century. And he writes a book on the Gemara, also halachic books and so on in Iraq. And he, when he got to this Gemara that we saw about the dog recognizes its master and so on, he wants to explain how amazing dogs are. That's what he wants to explain. And he tells us a story, which I don't know if it happened or not. We should assume maybe it happened. Very into details. About how amazing dogs are. And take a look inside his book, which is an amazing. In the book about Gemara, about Talmud, he starts to tell this story. And I brought in source number 8, also the Hebrew, but I translated it into English. So take a look in source number 8. And it shall be recounted in the book, which includes the general collection of stories speaking of the faithfulness of dogs and their love for their masters. First of all, he says that one day someone will write down a book about that includes all the different stories about the faithfulness and the love the dogs have to their masters. One day someone will write a book, and in that book there should be a story that is included about what? Their devotion and watchfulness for their master's well-being. For Sir Ivyari, that's the name of a person, Sir Ivyari, was a friend of King Carl V, he says, and one of the king's ministers envied him and held animosity in his heart towards him. And it came to pass that Sir Ivyari went to hunt in the forest with his dog. Next week we'll talk about hunting in Halacha. Does Torah permit hunting? We'll talk about this next week. He went to the forest to hunt with his dog. And that minister pursued him on a swift horse and killed him. However, the slain dog did not leave the forest and continued to howl and cry in distress until his bark grew hoarse, and then returned to Paris, to the home of one of his beloved master's acquaintances, where he found solace and satisfied his hunger Thus, the dog continued to behave in this manner for several days until people took notice and followed in his footsteps. They discovered the lifeless body of his murdered master in the forest, tells the Ben Ishchai. He went back, the dog by himself, cried, brought many people back to the forest, and that's how they discovered the body of this minister. But it doesn't end up here. Take a look. After a while, that very dog encountered the murderous minister while standing amidst the army of king's troops. We said the dog can recognize, can remember people, right? That we recognize this, right? The king's troops. The dog growled at him with anger and bit him, prompting all the soldiers to try to chase the dog away and beat him. However, their attempts were unsuccessful. And from that day forward, the dog traveled everywhere seeking vengeance for his master's death. He gnashed his teeth and bit anyone he encountered. Suspicion began to arise in the hearts of people, for they said there were rumor, there must be truth in it, and surely it was that minister who had killed Ivory, the master of the dog. The rumor reached the king, and he commanded that the minister present himself among his soldier and ordered them to bring that dog. When the minister arrived and sought the dog, he confronted him with raging fury. Not done yet. Take a look what he tells us about the story. Fascinating. It's a wild story. The king said to the minister, "Give thanks and tell me, please, what have you done?" But the minister hardened his heart and refused to confess. At that moment, the king pronounced his judgment and ordered him to fight the dog in the streets of the city of Paris. Life against life. As the murderous minister went out to battle, he was dressed in armor and held a spear in his hand. Suddenly, in a few moments, the dog circled him, baring his teeth, and let out a terrifying howl. Then, in an instant, he leaped upon his enemy's neck with all his might, threw him to the ground, and the minister cried out in pain and begged for mercy from the relentless dog who sought his life. And after he confessed his guilt before the assembly of the people, following his admission of sin, he was executed according to the king's decree in the presence of the entire crowd. Isn't that a wild story told by a rabbi in a book about commentary on the Talmud when we come to talk about how much dogs recognize their masters, saying, telling us, take a look how wonder. I heard a wonderful story. I don't think it's so wonderful. It's actually a very hard story about the dog. But he said, look how amazing dogs are. So you do see, based on the Gemara, based on the Ben Ishchai we saw now, based on the Maharal of Prague, that yes, we see rabbis that say dogs are actually positive. They're positive. Maybe in the time of Tanakh, we use them as punishment. Maybe in times of Tanakh, we use them in bad context. But today, when we know what the dogs are, and we know what quality they are, we know they're different than other animals, you can really feel that they feel you, you can really communicate with them, they can really recognize you, and therefore, they are a positive, very, very positive animal. But can we raise them? Can we raise them? Yeah? We all say we can. Can we raise them? The fact that they're positive, we all established. Okay, they're positive. We don't say they're negative. We saw the rabbi say they're positive. But saying they're positive, is that enough to permit raising dogs? I'll just mention a couple of maybe problems that can be with raising dogs. One, Shabbos. Dogs are muktzah. What do you mean by muktzah? Dogs are very hard to be treated on Shabbos. Taking them out, helping them, holding them. And so on. It's not as simple as it can be. Two, they're non-kosher animals. Non-kosher animals. Can a Jew raise non-pure animals? Can we do that? We don't eat them. We don't eat non-pure animals. We hold that they're not pure. Can we actually also raise them? All right? That's another question we should ask ourselves. Third question we should ask ourselves, what about other people that are terrified and scared from dogs? We have a mitzvah, ve'ahavta le'reacha kamocha. If you walk with your dog in the street and you start barking on someone, that's not a good thing. Maybe the guy doesn't know how, maybe the dog loves him and he wants to play with him. But for the other person, and again, not talking from a personal experience, for the other person, he's terrified. And we're not allowed to scare other people. We're not allowed. Do we have a prohibition? Yes, Benny.
a horse is also not kosher. So you're not supposed to touch a horse, you're not supposed to ride a horse, but are you allowed to feed him? Number one. Number two, with regards to the
Shabbat, to what? To someone who's afraid.
So I forgot. I'll come back.
If you remember, tell me if you remember. No problem. But we're going to go other non-kosher animals, like horses. We should ask ourselves, can a Jew?
But why is it issur to do something with a dog? Because all the issurim of Shabbat is mentet avot melacha.
Yeah, but no, but we're saying animals in general, there's different halachot of Shabbat regarding taking care of animals. In general, or different things. We have, for example, one of the halachot of Shabbat is called hunting. Hunting is forbidden on Shabbat. Next week we'll see, maybe it's forbidden all the time. All right? We'll talk about it next week. But on Shabbat, it's definitely forbidden. Everyone agrees a person cannot hunt on Shabbat. One of the things that is deriving from hunting is, for example, slaughter. Kosher slaughter of animals, like we spoke about last week, is forbidden on Shabbos. A person cannot slaughter animal on Shabbos, all right, for example, even if it's not hunting, all right? Another things that are deriving from this, a person is not allowed to catch a mosquito, a fly, on Shabbos, because it's like trapping him, which is almost like hunting him, all right? So there's different halachot regarding animals, the usage of animals on Shabbat. Many ramifications regarding dogs as well. Can you put your dog in the room and close the door? Not necessarily. It might be trapping him into a small place and you're not allowed to trap animals on Shabbat. Can you put your dog in a cage on Shabbat? Not everyone will agree you can do that. Can you raise your dog? Is the dog mukta? Like any other stuff. Can you walk with him outside? Problems of walking with objects from domain to domain. Different problems regarding Shabbat, regarding animals. So it's not as simple, not only for dogs, also for cats. Different animals on Shabbat is very, very complicated. But again, three reasons maybe why it would not be allowed. One, again, problem for Shabbat. Maybe because there's a problem for Shabbat, we say there's problems all the time. Two, we might say that because it's not kosher, we should not raise it. And that's true for all other non-kosher animals. And three, we should ask and try to explore, what about scaring other people? Many people are afraid of dogs. Can you own a dog when you know people might be afraid of it? All right? Very interesting. So let's try to explore it from a halachic perspective. Any questions so far before we move to the second part?
No, I'm afraid of dogs too.
Oh, I'm not the only one.
And growing up, I don't know, is there any basis to it? We always learned that if you say the pasuk, the dog will go away. Did you ever hear that?
I've never heard it before. Never heard it. Interesting.
Interesting. It's like it rolls off your tongue.
Interesting. When you see the dog.
That's the puzzle they say.
Wow.
That's the puzzle they say.
Wow. I don't know. You ever ask your dad why?
No, I didn't.
Wow.
He was also afraid.
Interesting. It was also. We'll talk about it at the end of it. Maybe we'll say it now. The fact that people are afraid of dogs is true. It's not only a Jewish thing. But I can tell you, and we know it today, that in general, dogs are not used to be. Today they're much more popular, but they didn't used to be a Jewish thing in general. And we know it specifically in the generations after the Holocaust, that people that walked down the street and saw a barking dog, it brought them very harsh memories from the time in the Holocaust, in the war. Very, very harsh memories of seeing Nazis with dogs and barking dogs and chasing dogs and because there is something that used to be, today it's different, but we're talking very not Jewish with dogs. And even today, there's not many frum, yeshivish families that will raise dogs. You don't see it a lot in yeshivish communities. You don't see it a lot. You see it more in open communities, more liberal communities, less in yeshivish frum communities. You don't see it a lot. We'll talk at the end of the class about Lubavitch, Chabad. They have their own approach toward everything that is regarding dogs and in general. But let's start first of all with the Gemara. The Gemara says as follows, source number 9, that the earliest source about can someone raise dogs or not, source number 9, a person, says the Gemara, says a person may not raise a dog unless it is tied with chains, says the Gemara. Says the Gemara, one second, Vanessa, says the Gemara. Rashi explains why. Why do you need to raise it with chains? Since it barks and bites and the woman can lose her baby from the fear. says Rashi, which is an example of something that we want to avoid, not necessarily a horrifying example, such as a woman losing her baby, but people are afraid of dogs, and the only permission you have raising dogs is only when you walk with them and they are leashed. Only when they are leashed. And we see today that's the ruling as well. There are some parks when you go with your dog, you're not allowed to let them just wander for free and run all around because people are afraid. Small children, women, men, old people, people are afraid of dogs. And the first thing we need to know before our love to animals and before our care to any kind of pet and human being, first of all, we care about other human beings. And we first of all prioritize mankind before animals. And we prioritize not afraid, not making other people afraid, small children, women, and men, before we take care of our animals. And this is the first thing we need to prioritize. Doesn't matter how much we say we love animals and how much we love dogs. And a person can love dogs, can love a cat, or can love whatever thing he has, snakes, whatever. The first thing we need to prioritize is that this love to the animals should never come on the expense of hurting other people. Never. Because other people are first in priority. That's a halakhic priority. It's not a recommendation. It's a halakhic ethical priority that we have in halakha. So we don't say a person cannot raise dog. Actually, we say he can. But he must make sure that this dog will not scare other people. Now, many times, again, I'm saying again, not from a personal experience, many times you will go to a person that raises a dog. And he will tell you, no, no, don't be afraid. He loves you. Just come closer. Just let him maybe smell you, sniff you a little bit. Just pet him a little bit. But the person doesn't want to. We're not allowed to force the person to love the dog. We're not allowed to do that. All right? Because if a person is afraid of dog, the person is first. The dog is second. Or any animal is second. All right? So a person, says the Gemara, can raise a dog. But this dog has to be leashed at the home, at the house, without any other people. Do whatever you want with him. Can be, can wander for free. Can walk, jump on the couches, whatever, no problem. But when it involves other people and you walk in the street, it should not be in a sense that it afraid that many that it scares other people. And take a look at another source the Gemara brings in source number 10. The sages taught in a Braita. A person may not raise a dog unless it is tied with a chain, but he may raise a dog in a city that is close to the border of the country. And in that case, he should tie it during the day, but may release it at night. We see a more extended version of this law, saying that, that it's true, a person should have the dog leashed, but if he lives in a place where his backyard is so big that if the dog will run away, will run out unleashed, he will not meet any person. I'll give you an example. In the kibbutz where Priel lives, all right, her house, her parents' house, is bordering an orchard. All right? A very big orchard. So the dog is free at night because he can run in the orchard wherever he wants. There's no men, no people there, no one walks there, and there's no harm to be done. All right? But if their house would not be edged, bordered with an orchard, but would be on the edge, closed to the street or to other people's house, no, definitely not. He cannot run wherever he wants. He cannot be a wandering dog. It is forbidden from halacha to make your dog a wandering dog. It has to be leashed if it might meet other people. But we see there is kind of a way to permit him also not being leashed if it's actually close to a rural place. All right, now obviously when you have a backyard, it can be, it can wander for free, but you should make sure it cannot run into your neighbor's backyard, it cannot run to the street. You also don't want your dog to run to the street, obviously, right? But in general, we should be very, very careful about it. And take a look in source number 11. Another source, the Gemara tells us, in source number 11, Rabbi Natan says, from where is it derived that one may not raise a vicious dog in his house, and one may not set up an unstable ladder in his house? The verse states, you shall not bring blood into your house. So the rabbis are also concerned about raising a vicious dog. In other words, everything we said so far about the dog must being leashed is only about a regular trained dog. But a vicious dog, now some people say there's no such a thing as a vicious dog. There is a dog that the owner is vicious to him. And that's why the dog will be vicious and cruel to other people, right? But when we say vicious dog, we mean about a dog that is not trained, all right? And it's very important that the halacha said the person is not allowed to raise a dog that he cannot control. All right? In other words, the leash permission is only about dogs that are trained and they're good and you can control them. But if you have a dog that you've never trained before, he's a new dog, it's a huge problem halachically to raise him. Why? Because we're concerned of lodge into the house. It's almost like leaving an unmaintained ladder that someone might climb, and it's unmaintained, he may fall. All right? Like, you can't know what's going to happen because it's not under your control anymore. You need to be responsible for whatever you bring into your house. It can be the ladder. It can be anything else, and also your pet. You should be very responsible for it as well. And we see that some rabbis really did not like dogs. Some of them really, really didn't like dogs. They brought in source number 12. It taught in a brighter that Rabbi Eliezer the Great said, one who raises dogs is like one who raises pigs. They are both cursed. Who are both? Pigs and dogs, or the dogs and the owner? Pigs and the owner, or that's a good question. Which one? But you see, there are some rabbis in the Gemara time who did not like animals, who did not like the dogs specifically. He said it's like raising pigs. All right? Very, very interesting, because both of them, he says, were cursed. And halacha lemaiseh, Rambam is poskin, the Maimonides is poskin regarding dogs. In source number 13, he says, similarly, he says, our sages forbade raising pigs in all places. We know a Jew is not allowed to raise pigs. Right? Not allowed to. The non-kosher animal. Very interestingly, there is one kibbutz in Israel called Mazrea, where they raise pigs. Maybe Benny can tell us a little bit about it. In kibbutz Mazrea, by the way, legally in Israel, you're not allowed to raise pigs. It's illegal. It's illegal to raise pigs. In Israel, one kibbutz is actually raising pigs, pork, to slaughter, to eat. It's a very secular kibbutz up north. And what they do is they found a way to overpass the law. Why? The law of the state says, of Israel, says you're not allowed to raise pigs on the land. So they built a ramp, and they raised their pigs on a ramp. And that by that, it's not raised on the land, and they say it's not illegal. So they raise the pigs. You can read about it. It's Kibbutz Mazrea. It's a very famous story in Israel. They're the only place in Israel that raises pigs and so on. Very secular kibbutz. Anyway, Rambam says, again, you're not allowed to raise pigs. Also, he says, our sages forbade raising dogs unless they are tied by a chain. One may, however, raise dogs in a city near the border. During the day, the dogs should be chained, but at night, let loose. Our sages said, cursed be one who raises dogs and pigs, because they frequently cause a great degree of damage. So he says, he brings all the sources together. The Rambam brings the sources that you're allowed to, needs to be leased, but at night he can wander away if it's close to the border. But he finishes and he also brings Rabbi Eliezer the Great, what he said about dogs and pigs, and he says, the reason they're cursed is because they bring a lot of damage. So maybe Rambam would say, it is allowed, it's not recommended. In times of the Rambam, he would say it's not recommended to raise dogs. And the Haggadot Maimoniot actually says in verse 14 on the Rambam, one can raise a dog that is not bad. No, any kind of restriction. So we see there is a halachic opinion that says there's no any kind of leashing, not leashing, and so on. The dog, if it's not bad, can be raised. So there is halachic room to say that the dog that is not bad can be actually raised in the house, all right? Same thing is brought in the Shulchan Aruch, in source number 15. You see how much the rabbis really dealt with raising dogs. So the Shulchan Aruch says, in source number 15, it is prohibited to raise a bad dog unless it is restrained by iron chains. However, in a house adjacent to the field, it is permissible to raise such a dog, and it should be tied during the day and released at night. And take a look what the Ramah, the Ashkenazi rabbi, said on the spot. He says, some authorities argue that in our current situation, where we are living among non-Jews, he speaks about his life in Poland, among non-Jews and nations, one can raise a bad dog with no restrictions. But it is better to be cautious in any case, as there is a concern that it may harm people. Therefore, it is prohibited to raise such a dog unless it is restrained by iron chains. And the Ramah says there are some opinions among rabbis that say when you live among other people, among non-Jews, and you might be afraid of anti-Semitism, of people harming your property, of people coming and trying to damage what you have, of really harming you, then yes, you are allowed to raise any kind of dog with no restrictions. It can wander wherever you want. It can jump on people, whatever. There is no restriction because it is there for self-defense. But he also concludes and he says, better not to. And if you have such a dog, it should be leashed. So to summarize so far, we saw three different answers. First answer brought by the Hagaot Maimoniot. He says everyone can raise any kind of dog unless the dog is bad. We saw the Ramah who brought opinions, Zasel. You can raise any kind of dog, even bad dogs, as long as when you live outside of Israel, you live with other people, you're afraid of them, right? And we saw another opinion by the Shulchan Aruch and Rambam, who say you can raise the dogs, but they have to be leashed. They can't be bad dogs, and they have to be leashed at night. They can be released at nighttime, only when you're close to the field, but not during daytime when they might encounter people. That, to wrap up so far, those were shown. Any questions so far about the raising dogs? I see that Vanessa doesn't like it.
I just have one comment.
Please.
The things that the rabbis are writing about of how to live with the dog, because, you know, you have to chain it up and, you know, you can't have it scaring a lot of people, are laws that exist today in society. In society, one has to, when they walk the dog, they got to keep it on a leash. One have to clean up after them. One, if the dog.
I wish everyone would do it. Good, you're right. But we should know it's not only a legal thing; it's also halachic. A person can't walk with his dog unleashed from halacha.
In a legal society, there are laws.
Sometimes people don't obey the rule, the laws, but they obey halacha. So I hope those people will know that also halachically it's prohibited to have this kind of unleashed dogs wandering around the streets. It's really, really bad. You don't see it maybe a lot in Toronto, but you do see it a lot in Israel. You can see just dogs wandering around, specifically in Moshavim and Kibbutzim, in small places. You can definitely see it. Another reason, maybe, why it would be a problem to raise dogs would be from the fact that dogs are taking your time from learning Torah, from doing what is really important in life. Vanessa, don't be angry at me. Don't be angry at me. 1 second. Well, hold your dogs for a second. Take a look at source number 16. Source number 16. The Yamshel Shlomo says on Baba Kama, it is indeed remarkable to observe the prevalent practice nowadays of raising dogs. It seems inappropriate to permit dogs altogether due to the potential shedding of blood in one's home and the endangerment of lives. Therefore, any God-fearing person should not raise a dog. Moreover, this applies to those who have a specific function, such as those used for hunting or as companions in the home. However, an ordinary dog, even if it does not bite, is prohibited because it gnaws and frightens women. We see that Yamshel Shlomo says every kind of dog is prohibited, and I don't understand why people will also raise dogs. So I'm sure there's some dog owners that will have a lot to say to Yamshel Shlomo why to raise dogs. But take a look on Shut Ya'avatz in source number 17. He says there's an additional prohibition, he says, especially in those specific dogs that are smooth and hairless. You know those kind of dogs? Smooth and hairless dogs, he says, which are acquired at high prices for playing and amusing oneself with them and indulging in them. He says, this is bad. A human, a Jew, a firm person should not waste his time buying those expensive dogs and amusing himself with them and so on. That's not what a Jew should do. Also, he says, due to the prohibition of mingling with scoffers, it is prohibited to play with these dogs. It is indeed a truly reprehensible act that we distance ourselves from. So if not, we say it's not only prohibited because it might be a danger. Some say it's also prohibited because it is not something that a Jew should do because it wastes the time and it's not such a good thing to do. I didn't bring it instead in sources, but I would say, because I brought actually in September 18 and in other places, that modern rabbis from the past 50, 60 years pointed out the benefit of raising dogs, the mental health benefits, helping people in need. We saw in COVID how many people decided they want to raise a dog, right? They want to adopt a dog so they'll have company and so on. And those rabbis said, in the old days, we didn't understand how important a dog might be for the mental health of the person. How can really he brings them out from loneliness? can bring him joy when you come back home from work and he jumps in you and so on. You can really see how amazing the thing is. And because of this, because of the mental health is just a part of the of raising dogs, it will definitely be allowed. There will be no problem raising it. With a footnote saying, still, you should be careful that this animal that you're raising would not scare other people and definitely would not harm them. All right. So in modern rabbis, they brought someone in source number 18. In other words, say that, yeah, you are allowed to raise a dog. Definitely, there's no halakhic prohibition of raising dogs. Also because of the mental health benefit that it has. But again, everyone, all the authorities agree, the first priority is to make sure no one will be scared when you raise the dogs. And unfortunately, sometimes people love their dogs so much that they don't really see if people are as afraid. Because you don't, after so many years when you raise dogs, and I see it with Priel's family, my in-law, after so many years that you love the dogs, you just can't really understand how can a person be afraid of them. But halachically, it's important to also be able to take a step backwards and see the picture from the other person's side and make sure that this person will not be scared when he comes and sees the dog. So it needs to be leashed. If he's afraid, definitely outdoors, it needs to be leashed. In the home, if someone is afraid, put him in a room or put it outside. You don't need to force someone, or actually you're not allowed to force someone to come and love the dog or pet the dog or save the dog if he's afraid of. Even though he might be mistaken, he might not understand dogs. Still, it is really prohibited to make a person scared of it. I want to finish with source number 19. I brought the Rebbe Milubavitch from Chabad, the Lubavitch Rebbe, because Chabad, they have a very interesting custom in general. They hold that a person should not surround himself with any kind of non-kosher animals. That's why when a baby is born, for example, they will buy him only toys from kosher animals. They're not going to buy a little puppy as a toy, as a doll. They will buy a little cow or a little chicken, because they're kosher animals. So it's very interesting. Take a look what he says in verse number 19. He translated it from the Rebbe Milubavitch. He says it is explicitly stated in the Shulchan Aruch, and he brings a halacha. Very interesting halacha. Not getting into this now, but very interesting halacha. That a woman should be cautious when leaving the mikveh. When a woman goes to the mikveh, she should be very cautious. That she should not be initially encountered by something impure, such as a dog or a donkey. That if a woman goes out of the mikveh and she is pure, she should not run. She should be very careful not to see the first thing she's encountering. She's going out sort of via pure bath to see an impure animal, such a dog or a donkey. And if they were encountered by these things, if she's a God-fearing, she should return and immerse herself. He says, and this is the practice of righteous women who would return and immerse even if they encountered something impure after leaving the mikveh building. Not getting to this halachic today. We don't hold like this. Maybe Chabad do. But we see it is brought in Shulchan Aruch that a woman that goes out of the mikveh pure should be careful not to see an impure animal. Because it might also turn her impure again. All right? Only by sightseeing, only by vision, by seeing the impure animal, he says. Why? So the Rebbe Milubavitch explains. The Lubavitcher explains. For the sight of these things has an undesirable effect on the reality of the fetus. Bezrat Hashem, there will be pregnancy, there will be a fetus. And seeing an unpure, impure animal has an undesirable influence on the development of the fetus. That's what he says. That's what he says. On the other hand, he says the sight and observation of something holy upon leaving the mikveh may have a positive effect on the form of the fetus. In other words, we learn from this halacha, says the Lubavitch Rebbe, that yes, seeing, visioning something has also an impact on our spiritual world. And he says, and understands from here, based on what was mentioned above, regarding the magnitude of the effect caused by sight, it is understood that when giving a toy in the shape of an animal to a baby, for whatever reason, because the baby is small, one should strive to choose a toy that is in the shape of a pure animal, pure bird, pure fish, and so on. And according to the custom of Israel, when the baby enters the world, they surround him with matters of holiness, such as reciting Tehillim and more, not giving him pets, not giving him non-kosher animals, and so on. Again, we don't hold like that halachically. It's only a Lubavitch menhag to hold so. But it's really interesting that they hold that seeing something impure can also have an internal impact on you. And that's why you won't see any Lubavitch family, any Chabad family that will raise dogs. They just don't raise dogs because they're non-kosher animals. And they're not allowed to bring non-kosher animals to their houses Also, not for eating, only for petting and for raising. So if I can wrap everything up, because we're already three and we'll finish here, if I can summarize everything, when we go to the biblical scriptures, we see mostly negative sources about the dogs. We saw one exception when the dogs did not bark on the Makat Bechorot, and therefore they were rewarded to eat the treif. Well, but when we go to the rabbis later on, we see an ambivalent approach. Some rabbis say they are wonderful, miraculous creatures. We saw the story. Ben Ish Chai said how he really, the dog saved, didn't save, but he was able to reveal this, you know, the homicide that took place and the murder that took place. And we saw how the Maharal says that the dog is all heart. But we also saw the Gemara says that you should be very, very careful when you raise dogs, because some people might be afraid of it. And when you raise the dogs, you really be careful not to harm other people. We'll finish here. We'll finish here. There is much more to say about the dogs. Much more to say about dogs. God willing, next week, we will continue our journey in animal issues in Halacha. And we'll learn about hunting in Halacha. Does Torah permits hunting? Right? Very interesting. Very interesting to think about it. Does the Torah permits hunting or not? Yes, Claudette?
What does the Halacha say about cats?
About cats?
Yeah.
You'll say the same thing. If you don't bring any impure animal to your house, then you're not going to bring also cats, right? If you bring a cat to your house, you'd be careful that people will not be afraid of the cat. People are less afraid from cats than they're afraid of dogs. But that's for a different discussion in general. But same thing would be that maybe you can have fish, but also kosher fish. I don't know. Different ideas. But really important here to understand that also, if you love your animals so much, you should love human beings more. And you should know that, really, if someone is scared from it, it's better to put the dog in a room and not scare your neighbor or your fellow or your friend that's coming to your house. But aside of that, feel free to raise any kind of dogs that you want, unless they are not trained and bad dogs. But you should take care that they will be trained one day and will become good dogs if they can be. Thank you. Yeah.
I don't remember where I read